Happy Friday to you. I hope you're having a great weekend, and I hope you have an even better Lord's Day, that you've got a good home congregation. You're going to go and worship and fellowship and study and praise and pray and serve and encourage with. If you don't have a place like that, find one. And if you're currently looking and you're within driving distance of the Elkhart East building, we extend to you an invitation to come and check us out. Maybe we can be your church home. Thank you also to those of you who are making sure that this program stays on the air and stays online. God bless you for those donations. I want you to open to 2 Chronicles chapter 22 today. We're going to roll back just a little bit to remind ourselves of a key short-term player in this moment of history. And the moment we're talking about is probably 852 B.C. The player's name is Ahaziah, and he is the king of southern Judah. He's the only one that's left after his father died of all of his siblings, because his father, Jehoram, is underneath God's judgment. He died as a bad guy. He had been married to the princess of northern Israel, a woman by the name of Athaliah. She'll come back into our story in a little bit. And he was more like his wife's family, a worshiper of Baal, a worshiper of Asherah, a worshiper of various deities. So that's why he came under God's judgment, and now his son is in control. Verse number 2 of 2 Chronicles 22. Ahaziah was 22 years old when he began to reign. He reigned 1 year in Jerusalem. That's it. His mother's name was Athaliah, the granddaughter of Omri, and the daughter of Ahab and Jezebel. He also walked in the ways of the house of Ahab, for his mother was his counselor in doing wickedly. So mom really impacted on his life in a negative way. Verse 4, he did what was evil in the sight of he who is, as the house of Ahab had done, for after the death of his father, they were his counselors to his undoing. So he received more direction from his mother's side of the family. Verse 5, he even followed their counsel and went with Jehoram, that's his uncle, the son of Ahab, king of Israel, to make war against Hazael, king of Syria, at Ramoth Gilead. Now, Hazael here, it's possible, because I don't think the records in Syria or Aram at this time are all that clear chronologically. And so it's possible that Hazael in this context is actually still a commander in the Syrian army, but he will soon be the king of Syria. And so it could be that the prophet writers are just jumping ahead of the story a little bit when they list him here as king. But the situation is that the Syrians had taken over parts of northern Israel earlier in their history. Some of those places had been returned. The area up by Dan, down to the area around the Sea of Galilee. All of that had been returned. But the area from the foot of Mount Hermon down to an area about, 20-some miles southeast of the end of the Sea of Galilee. All of that Golan Heights and part of northern Gilead was still under Syrian control. The southern fortress for the Syrian control of that region was a place called Ramoth Gilead. Ahab died trying to take back that fortress city, and from that, all of the territory to the north of it. Jehoram never got it done during his time as the king of northern Israel. So now he is trying again to get it done, and he invites his nephew to come and help him. And this is what happened. The Syrians wounded Joram. Now that's Jehoram, the king of northern Israel. And he returned to be healed in Jezreel of the wounds that he had received at Ramah when he had fought against Hazael, king of Syria. Jezreel is a favorite hangout for the northern kings for some reason. It's a very pleasant place. It's very nice. It's a nice, beautiful city in the center of a beautiful, prosperous valley. And so they spent apparently a lot more time at Jezreel than they did at the capital city of Samaria. From the battle front here at Ramoth Gilead to Jezreel is about 40 road miles, I think, something of that neighborhood. You got to go down and cross the Jordan River and go past Beth Shemesh, or not Beth Shemesh, Beth Sha'an, and then up to Jezreel. Take by chariot a full day easily. So he goes there to heal up after his battle wound. And then we're told this, and Ahaziah, the son of Jehoram, king of Judah, went down to see Joram, the son of Ahab, in Jezreel because he was wounded. And that is exactly what it also says in 2 Kings about this, is that the king of northern Israel is recovering at Jezreel when the king of southern Judah goes over to check up on him. Now, verse 7 of our 2 Chronicles passage says, "But it was ordained by God that the downfall of Ahaziah should come about through his going to visit Joram." So the writer of 2 Chronicles, which tends to be more tied into actions by God, I think, at times, says that what happens next is all from God. Let's shift over to the 2 Kings passage. 2 Kings chapter 8. First, let's read verse number 29. King Joram returned to be healed in Jezreel of the wounds that the Syrians had given him at Ramah when he fought against Hazael, king of Syria. And Ahaziah, the son of Jehoram, king of Judah, went down to see Joram, the son of Ahab, in Jezreel because he was sick. Chapter 9. Then Elisha, the prophet, called one of the sons of the prophets. Remember, they are the spiritual leaders in northern Israel right now. And Elisha is the head of all these various schools of the prophets, as we sometimes call them, scattered around Israel. So Elisha's apparently one of those places, and he taps an unnamed member of that religious community for a special mission from God. He said to him, "Tie up your garments," which is a way of saying get yourself ready for a run, "and take this flask of oil in your hand." It's special anointing oil. It smells heavily of cinnamon. "And go to Ramoth Gilead." Now, Ramoth Gilead, as I already told you, is on the east side of the Jordan Valley. It's several miles east of the Jordan River itself, up onto the plateau. And so wherever this prophet is going from, it's going to take him a little bit of time to get there. And this is what he's told to do. When you arrive, look there for Jehu, the son of Jehoshaphat, son of Nimshi. So this guy is a northern Israeli commander. He actually was on the immediate military staff of Ahab several years back. That's going to come up into the story later. So you go in and you have him rise from among his fellows, his fellow commanders, and then you lead him in to an inner chamber. So you take him to a private location. Then you take that flask of oil, you pour it on his head, and you say, "Thus says he who is, I anoint you king over Israel." Then you open the door and you run away. You flee. You do not linger. Now, a couple of things to take note of here. This was actually an assignment given by God to Elijah before Elijah tapped Elisha to be his protege. In fact, it was three things that Elijah had been given by God to do. One was, you make Hazael the king of Syria, you make Jehu the king of Israel, and you make Elisha your protege. And whoever is under the judgment of God and gets away from the king of Syria is going to get got by the king of Israel, and the one that gets away even from the king of Israel, Elisha is going to get. So that was all in the assignment given to Elijah to deal with judgment against both Syria and northern Israel. But Elijah only selected Elisha. He never got around to the other two things. So here we are several years later, and Elisha has been told, get it done. He passes it on to one of his followers, and he warns him, when you do this, you need to skedaddle out of there as fast as your little feet can carry you. Don't hang around. Verse 4. So the young man, the servant of the prophet, went to Ramoth Gilead. When he came, behold, the commanders of the army were in council. So they're all sitting around outside with their tents, talking about how to prosecute this siege of Ramoth Gilead. He said, "I have a word for you, O commander." And Jehu, who seems to be the senior of them, said, "To which of us all? Who are you talking to? There's a bunch of us here who are commanders." And he said, "To you, commander," specifically pointing or indicating he means Jehu. So he arose and he went into the house, which is exactly what the prophet had been told to do, go into a private setting. The young man then poured the oil on his head, saying to him, "Thus says he who is the God of Israel, I anoint you king over the people of he who is over Israel." And then we get additional information that had been given to him by Elisha from God. "You shall strike down the house of Ahab, your master, so that I may avenge on Jezebel the blood of my servants, the prophets, and the blood of all the servants of he who is. For the whole house of Ahab shall perish, and I will cut off from Ahab every male, bond or free, in Israel." So we've seen this prophecy before, that the line of Ahab in northern Israel is going to be completely cut off. "I will make the house of Ahab like the house of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat." Remember, that was the first post-Solomonic split-up dynasty in northern Israel, and it gets dead-ended after two kings. "And like the house of Baasha, the son of Ahiyah." That's the second dynasty. Same thing happens. Two kings, I think, and then it's dead-ended. And then comes the curse that was actually placed on those first two dynasties as well. And the dog shall eat Jezebel in the territory of Jezreel, and none shall bury her. So the two previous dynasties were cursed that none of their men would ever come to graves intact, because if they died inside the city, they'd be eaten by dogs. If they died in the countryside, they'd be eaten by birds. Jezebel and Ahab get the same curse put on their family, but Jezebel is specified that she's definitely going to die in the city and be munched on by dogs. And specifically for her, she won't even get buried intact. Then, after the prophet delivered this message straight from God, he opened the door and he fled. Now, understand, it took less than a minute to say all of that. So, what the people see on the outside is they see Jehu and this guy walk into the room, walk into the house, close the door, and about a minute later, the young man comes tearing out of there and runs away. And then Jehu comes out. When Jehu came out to the servants of his master, they said to him, "Is all well? Is everything okay? What did this mad fellow come to you? Why? Why did?" And by the way, the Hebrew here is still used in Yiddish-speaking circles today. It's meshuga. What did this meshuga fellow say to you? Why was he here? And he said, "Oh, you know the fellow. You know his talk." Jehu clearly thinks that these guys were the reason that this just happened. He thinks he's being punked. He thinks he's being messed with. Come on, you know who this guy is. You know what he said to me. And they said, "No, that's not true. Go ahead, tell us. Tell us what this is all about." And he said, "Thus and so he spoke to me, saying, 'Thus says he who is, I anoint you king over Israel.'" So he shares the basic information that the guy just dumped anointing oil on my head and said that he who is, Yahweh, has declared that I am now king of northern Israel, and that I need to deal out judgment against the house of Ahab and Jezebel. And you can tell immediately that very few people like Jehoram of northern Israel, and very few of these guys liked their former boss before that, Ahab or Jezebel, who's still alive. Because immediately they took haste. Every man of them took his garment. They put it under him on the bare steps. The Hebrew, apparently it's talking about bones here. And so that's why we get the idea of bare. So something happens where they set up a makeshift coronation area using their clothes. And so then they blew the trumpet and they proclaimed, "Jehu is king." So they definitely are on board with this idea of a new dynasty. Verse 14, "Thus Jehu, the son of Jehoshaphat, the son of Nimshi, conspired against Joram," that is, against King Jehoram of northern Israel, the son of Ahab and Jezebel. Now, Jehoram, with all Israel, had been on guard at Ramoth-Gilead against Hazael, king of Syria, but King Joram had returned to be healed in Jezreel of the wounds that the Syrians had given him when he had fought with Hazael, king of Syria. We've heard that three times now, that's why he's at Jezreel. And Jezreel is, as I said, about 40 road miles away. Couple of days walk, but a very long, perhaps, day of travel by chariot. But I'm guessing that Jehu probably breaks it up into two pieces. Depending on what time of day this all happened with the anointing. So Jehu said to his fellow commanders, his subjects now, his command staff, now that he is king, if this is your decision, then let no one slip out of the city to go and tell the news in Jezreel. So he says, then we need to slam down really tight security on this. Nobody from here that knows anything about this can leave. It has to be kept under wraps. And then Jehu mounted his chariot and went to Jezreel, for Jehoram lay there. And Ahaziah, king of Judah, had come down to visit Joram. I believe that he may have left and ridden through the night in order to go to Jezreel, and that the next part of the story, I think, takes place in the early portion of the next day, as he is approaching Jezreel from the east. At Jezreel is situated in such a way it has really good line of sight from the eastern watchtower down the Jezreel Valley all the way to the drop-off into the Jordan Valley. The Jordan Valley is below sea level in this area south of the Sea of Galilee. And so Jezreel Watchtower can see 10, 15 miles down to the east toward Beth Sha'an. In fact, if you're up on the watchtower of what would have been Jezreel City, you could have seen the hill of Beth Sha'an from the watchtower. And that's like 15 miles away, I think. So, verse 17. Now the watchman was standing on the tower in Jezreel, and he saw the company of Jehu as he came and said, I see a company. That's his job. He's supposed to be keeping an eye, especially toward the direction from which any news about Ramoth-Gilead battle is going to come. So he reports, I see out there, way out there in the distance, some sort of traveling company. So Joram, the king of Israel, said, take horsemen, send to meet them, and let them say, is it peace? So send out a rider and find out whether or not we have a peace treaty, whether or not Ramoth-Gilead belongs to us. Verse 18, so a man on horseback went to meet him and said, thus says the king, is it peace? And Jehu's response was, what do you have to do with peace? Turn around, ride behind me. Now that's kind of harsh. Kind of a harsh response, possibly because he sees this guy as a potential supporter of King Jehoram. But he makes him fall into line with the entourage. So the watchman reported what he just saw. He says, the messenger reached them, but he's not coming back. So then he, meaning King Jehoram, sent out a second horseman. Remember, who's riding very, very fast out there to this approaching group of chariots and horsemen. And so he came and he said the exact same thing. Thus the king has said, is it peace? And Jehu answered, what do you have to do with peace? Turn around and ride behind me. All right, so now they're probably much closer, maybe just a few miles away at this point. And again, the watchman reported, he reached them, but he's not coming back. And then he says this, the driving is like the driving of Jehu, the son of Nimshi, for he drives like a mashuga. It's the word again. He's like a crazy man. Apparently, Jehu had a bit of a reputation for being kind of wild when he drove his war chariot. King Jehoram then said, make ready, and they made ready his chariot. it was probably a standby chariot. And so Jehoram, king of Israel, and Ahaziah, king of Judah, set out, each in his chariot, and they went to meet Jehu. So you've got the two kings, Uncle Jehoram, king of northern Israel, nephew Ahaziah, king of southern Judah. They jump in their chariots, they go through the east gate, and they head toward this approaching group led by Jehu. And guess where they meet? They met him at the property of Naboth the Jezreelite. That's the vineyard that was stolen by murder by Queen Jezebel from this righteous man, Naboth. And it's just outside the east walls of Jezreel. And that's where they meet. And when Jehoram saw Jehu, he said, "Is it peace, Jehu? Have we come to some sort of arrangement? Does Ramoth-Gilead belong to us?" But Jehu answered, "What peace can there be so long as the whorings and the sorceries of your mother Jezebel are so many?" Now that's very loaded negative language right there. But it reveals how Jehu has felt for a long time, apparently, about Jezebel, and before that, perhaps about Ahab, that they have been involved in spiritual adultery and involved in supernatural, inappropriate sorceries, that is, reaching out into the spirit world, sometimes by drugs, sometimes by chanting ceremonies. And basically the challenge is, how can we have peace as long as your dynasty is still alive? And that's when Joram realizes there is treachery.